I'm Juliana Grassi, your host of the Rare Disease Report podcast. In the U.S., a rare disease is classified as having fewer than 200,000 documented cases per year. However, rare disease may be more prevalent than you think. Approximately 25 to 30 million Americans, or 1 in 10 people, are living with one of the 7,000 rare diseases that span a multitude of medical specialties. Less than 10% of them have an FDA-approved treatment. There's no shortage of challenges in the rare disease space. Individuals with these conditions may have limited to no treatment options. Researching therapies can be difficult or virtually impossible due to the lack of funding or access to patients. Many of these challenges constitute a lack of awareness on the part of the medical community, patients, government agencies, and the general public. So let's start talking. This episode is the first of a two-part installment on the rare neurological condition known as CDKL5 deficiency disorder. Also known as CDD, this disorder is estimated to occur once in every 40 or 60,000 live births. Individuals usually present by experiencing their first seizure within the first few months of their life. In addition to the onset of seizures, it's characterized by severe neurodevelopmental delay that affects the individual's cognitive, motor, speech, and visual function, as well as a variety of other impacts. I had the honor of speaking with Whitney Mitchell, who shares her experience as a first-time mom to her daughter, Havila. For the first 3 months, everything was going smoothly, until she woke up to Havila having her first seizure in bed next to her and her husband. Thank you so much for being here with me today, Whitney. I was hoping that you could start by introducing yourself and then telling us a little bit about your daughter.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. My name is Whitney Mitchell, and my husband and I and our children live in the Northern Virginia area. Our oldest daughter, Havila, is 5 and a half, and she is our child who has CDD, CDKL5 deficiency disorder.
Okay. Yeah. And how is she doing?
Well, thank you for asking that. She's doing pretty well. I think for Havila, we say she's doing really well when she's very stable. Mm-hmm. When her seizures are fairly well controlled, when there's not a lot of ups and downs. Right now, we're dealing with a little issue with her ankles. She has some dystonia in her ankles, mm-hmm. which has caused it so that she can't wear her foot orthotics. So we started her on a medication to try and deal with that. But the medication has caused some side effects that we're not real happy with. So we're trying to wean off that and explore some other options. So things are a little in flux right now. Her seizures are a little bit more out of control than we would like. But overall, she is in a happy spot. She's pretty healthy. So it could definitely be worse.
Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, can you share a little bit about her story and, I mean, your family's story and just this whole journey of her getting diagnosed with this rare disorder?
Yeah, absolutely. So Havila, when she was born, we thought she was totally typical. No reason to suspect there was anything else going on with her. She passed all her tests. When she was 3 and a half months old, I woke up in bed to her seizing next to me. It was a tonic-clonic seizure. It probably lasted 4 or 5 minutes. We, of course, took her to the hospital. From that point forward, she was probably having 8 or 10 tonic-clonic seizures a day that were all lasting an average of 5 minutes. That was kind of the point where my life changed. So we had no idea what we were dealing with. All we knew is this baby had seizures. Because she was only 3 months old, we didn't realize that she was going to have all these other developmental delays and other diagnoses, you know, kind of those sub-diagnoses under that CDKL5 umbrella, of course. The doctors did help us a bit to try and get some testing done to see if we could identify the source of the problem. When none of those initial tests turned up anything, we were told, oh, she'll probably just grow out of it. Let's put her on some medication for seizure control, take her home. I didn't feel like I got a whole lot of support. And the medication did absolutely nothing. by the time Havila got to 6 months and she wasn't even rolling over and she wasn't making eye contact and she wasn't hitting those milestones that you would expect, that's when I became really confident that we're dealing with something bigger here.
Was there anything else, like any other diagnoses along the way that like they thought they had, or was it kind of a mystery for that whole time? You were just trying to figure it out.
It was really a mystery. I mean, they gave us the obvious ones, epilepsy, cerebral palsy. I think more so that we could get what we needed through insurance so that insurance would cover things for us. So she was diagnosed with those. Nobody ever misdiagnosed her. So when she was initially diagnosed with epilepsy, I mean, that was a pretty immediate diagnosis we got in that first initial hospital visit. We were there for a week and they said, well, this is epilepsy. We have no cause for all of these recurring seizures. But at the time, the neurologist actually told us that, oh, this is probably just because she's a baby and maybe her brain hasn't fully developed and she'll grow out of it. So they really wanted to just say epilepsy and medicate for epilepsy, and there's probably nothing else going on here. And as I started raising concerns to them, even in that initial hospital visit, I spoke with the neurologist who was working with us, and I said, Havila does this really weird thing with her eyes where they cross in a lot or they cross out, they don't focus. And he said, oh, that has nothing to do with seizures. So they were pretty dismissive, even of my other concerns for her general overall development. They did not listen well, other than offering us the basic genetic testing. Once that came back, they said, oh, it's not genetic. This is just epilepsy. Those first few months were really tough for me. I didn't know if she was dying. We really had no idea what we were dealing with. As she got older, it became more and more obvious that she was not making the progress that you would expect from a typical child. And so we started adding specialists to our team, getting more tests run. We had genetic testing that they came back, found nothing. So it wasn't until she was 13 months old that we found a new pediatrician and epileptologist. We are still with them. I cannot say enough good things about the two of them together. The pediatrician actually is the one who said, can I run a couple more genetics tests? The initial genetics testing that we went through was somewhat invasive. It was really traumatizing. I was a little bit opposed, but she said, this is just a simple swab. It won't hurt her. And I was like, well, if it's not going to hurt and if insurance is going to pay for it, why not try it? I was feeling a little bit discouraged, I think, at this point in our journey. I didn't have a lot of hope. She ran those tests. When Havila was 17 months old, I'll never forget this day, she called and she said, we just got your test results back. Can you come meet me in my office? And I thought, oh no, that can't be good. And she told us, she said it came back. It found this rare disease. I've never heard of it before. It's called CDKL5. So she and I sat down for probably 2 or 3 hours. I felt like she really held my hand. Mm-hmm. She said, I don't know anything about this. I deal with a lot of other rare diseases and I'm here for you and I want to help you, but we're going to have to learn together. That moment for me was really pivotal. The life-changing moment was Havila's first seizure, but the diagnosis moment was the pivotal moment of, I felt like I was just in despair, which seems like such a strong word, but that's really where we felt. Getting that diagnosis, in so many weird ways, it felt like the sense of relief. Like all of a sudden we have answers, mm-hmm. and we have community, and we're not alone anymore. It was the beginning of our new journey. And it felt better.
Were there any challenges or instances along the way that you didn't expect to encounter or that really surprised you?
I think it would be harder to pick out a couple. Yeah. Just a couple, yeah. The first seizure was definitely a shock. Mm-hmm. And then those subsequent few weeks of seizures were a shock. I think eventually you kind of just get accustomed to it. Havila's seizure types change so frequently. Her seizure presentation changes so frequently that when she has a new one that I've never seen before, I still am surprised. Even just on Tuesday, she had one in the morning that I'd never seen, and it kind of scared me a little bit. So I have all my little emergency tools handy. I'll grab her pulse ox and get her emergency rescue meds ready, and just monitor her. But so her seizures can still catch me off guard. I've been surprised both pleasantly and unpleasantly how some of her medical professionals have handled her and how they have addressed me. Sometimes I break down in tears because I'm so frustrated and I can't get anybody to listen. And then sometimes I break down in tears because I feel so cared for and I feel like, oh, you get it.
Yeah, I can imagine that you've seen both ends of the spectrum when it comes to, you know, the clinicians, and some can be dismissive, but yeah, when you find someone who really can pay attention and care for you and give you what you need, that's makes a whole difference.
And when I approach people, my thought process is, when I first started this journey, I was absolutely clueless. I didn't know anything about CDKL5. I really had very basic knowledge of epilepsy and cerebral palsy and vision and hearing impairments and all these things that we now, I kind of feel like an expert in, at least when it comes to HAVLA, but it took me a number of years. And so when I approach these clinicians, people only know what they know, and I don't expect them to know everything as it relates to HAVLA. And we're all in this and learning together, but at least be open-minded and listen. With HAVLA, she keeps us on our toes. Something new every day. Life is not boring with HAVLA, and the surprises that we encounter along the way are both good and bad.
If you can elaborate a little bit, in some ways she's like a normal kid, you know, like she's got this personality. She, like you said, she loves being around people. She loves the attention, but then obviously, you know, like she doesn't speak and her vision is compromised. What are her inhibitors that come with this disease?
So for HAVLA, we always say that HAVLA is normal. She's normal for HAVLA. So I try not to put a lot of expectations on her. We like to say that HAVLA is in there and the burden is on us to help her express herself. Mm-hmm. So she does have the vision impairment. She does have diagnosed hearing impairment. So through the state of Virginia, she is considered legally deafblind. She can see a little bit and she can hear a little bit. It's all cortical. So her eyes and her ears work fine. It's just the way that her brain is processing those signals. So through direct instruction through her hearing teacher and her vision teacher, she is slowly learning to process more of these signals. It's really fascinating to watch that happen. She has limited use of her hands. She barely uses her left hand at all. Her right hand is starting to get stronger, but she still doesn't use it in a typical way. She can't point with her fingers. She doesn't pick up things with her thumb and her first finger, like the little pincer grip, I think they call it. Mm-hmm. So she has very limited use of her hands. She has movement disorder. So the thing that probably gets in HAVLA's way the most in terms of her ability to access her education is the fact that she can't be still. So when she's in a chair, she's shaking and kicking and moving her head. When she's on the floor, she's rolling and sitting and rolling and kicking and just always has this need for movement. And when you're trying to instruct her and she's moving, it makes it hard. It's also hard to even know her level of ability because we think she can sit really well, but because she always is moving, she never sits still long enough for us to be able to say, oh, HAVLA can sit for 10 minutes. I think she could. Or when she's holding a toy, one of her IEP goals is that she'll hold a toy for a certain length of time. But because she's always moving, she's always dropping things. So I like to say, I think she could, but how do we get through to her? Mm-hmm. So the burden is really on us, her parents, her teachers, her doctors, her therapists, I feel like, she's in there and she's smart. And how do we give her the tools that she needs in order to express herself?
I know she's in school now. How does that work when she's in school or when she's, you know, not with you?
School is hard. School is hard for mom. We have had a long journey getting to a place where I finally feel like I can send her. So this is actually her fourth year enrolled in school. The first 3 years were really tough. And for most of those 3 years, she stayed at home with me. She went, I think, 2 months initially, and then there was a time where we tried to send her for a couple weeks and had to bring her back home, and then tried to send her again for a couple weeks and had to bring her back home. I just felt like she wasn't safe there, and they didn't know how to meet her needs and to care for her mm-hmm. the way that I wanted her to be cared for and the way I feel like she deserves to be cared for. Mm-hmm. But the county has agreed to provide private nurses for Havila. So they actually have three assigned to her now. They've sent them into our home so I can train them myself.
Wow.
They rotate through the nurses. So only one goes with Havila on any specific day, but we have backups, which I never even thought we'd have one nurse, let alone backup nurses. I call them my Mary Poppins nurses. They're just so good to her. They seem to really care for her. They're kind to her. They can be mama bear for me when I'm not there. You know, they tell off the therapist if anybody's pushing her too hard or doing something she doesn't like. And I just adore all three of them. And so I'm finally at a place where I feel like Havila can go to school. So yesterday was her first day of kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
And it went pretty well. She had a good day. She came home with a smile on her face. So that makes me feel good to send her back again. But it's still hard for me when she's not here. I'm so used to providing care for her and knowing how she's doing. And so then to take a report, I think any parent whose child is nonverbal, whether or not they have seizures or anything else going on, to have a child come home and not be able to say, how was your day? Did anything good happen? Did anything bad happen? Did anybody hurt you? These are all the questions you want to be able to ask your child. And so sending any nonverbal child away, I think, is scary.
So obviously you've been trying to ease her into school, and it seems like she's in a good place now. So hopefully this year is the best one yet.
She did receive home-based services for a long time. So the mm-hmm. teacher and therapist were coming into the house. She likes the attention. She likes to have people around. She loves people. And I felt like she was making good progress when she was getting consistent input. Mm-hmm. We've seen huge improvement in her vision. She's had a vision teacher since she was 8 months old. And she started cortical and visual impairment level 1, which is the lowest level. And we've already made progress up to, I think that she's now a level 4, which to go from level 1 to level 4 in 4 years is really phenomenal, or I guess 5 years now. I'm so happy. Physical therapy is critical for her.
Mm-hmm.
She gets occupational therapy. She gets input from a deaf teacher. She gets speech therapy. She has orientation and mobility. She has all these. And then, I mean, of course, the teacher herself, to have some teacher sit with Havila and just play with her and help her explore things. I think that's just so important for her. And we always say that while Havila's safety is first and her comfort is second, I also want her to have as many opportunities as she can
mm-hmm.
to develop and to live life. And so if the school can keep her safe and comfortable, which I think they've really made good steps to get to that point, then I want her to be able to go. And I think she seems like she's enjoying it so far. So hopefully she likes it.
Yeah. You did mention your emergency toolkit, right? Here for when she has her seizures. Would you mind like sharing what's in that?
Sure. So Havila has a VNS, a vagus nerve stimulator. It's a little implant that is in up high, kind of like below her shoulder, above her chest. Mm-hmm. I like to describe it as it's kind of like a pacemaker, but for seizure control.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that we can use the VNS to help us control seizures is we activate it by swiping a magnet across it. So that magnet stays in my emergency toolkit. If Havila is having a bad seizure, we have directions to swipe it every 30 seconds, 3 times. Mm-hmm. So the magnet definitely goes with us. Her seizure rescue meds. We have a couple different ones we use depending on the type of seizure and length of the seizure. This isn't pleasant, but we keep a vomit bag because she tends to vomit during her seizures. We have bibs because she drools during certain seizures. We have, I wouldn't say they're necessarily in my emergency toolkit, but we have things available to us like a safety helmet. Mm-hmm. So if you're having a lot of drop type seizures where she might hit her head, a Hensinger collar, which is a soft padded collar that she can wear if she's having certain types of seizures while she's sitting in her activity seat, having her G-tube feed. Again, mostly to protect the head and the neck. Kind of just stashed all around the house. I just have mm-hmm. different things that she might need to assist her during a seizure.
Yeah, and you said they typically last like 4 to 5 minutes.
Well, it depends. So in the beginning, yeah, for sure. We got up to, there was a time when she was having like 13 minutes. Most of her tonic clonics, she's currently having probably 2 or 3 a day. I would say they average around 4 minutes. Usually they'll start as a tonic clonic seizure. Then they'll kind of slowly change into something else. So yesterday she had one that actually started focal motor with her mouth twitching, turned into tonic clonic. Then she had some spasms and eventually she went into these myoclonic jerks mm-hmm. Where her arms, her fists clench and her arms come up to her side and she might have some atonic head drops. So Havala tends to have a variety of different seizure types all in one, we would call it a event or a cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes she'll just have a one-off, we might call it a head drop, an atonic seizure where she loses that muscle tone. And that just lasts a split second. So they really vary.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing very many that last more than 4 minutes these days.
Okay. Is there anything else that we didn't, I know we're like at time, but is there anything that we didn't touch on that you wanted to mention?
Thank you for asking that. I think I would really like to let people know, and I think this has kind of been my, just on my heart lately, is that sometimes this life, this rare disease life, can be kind of hard. You know, it can be kind of hard for the family. Hard doesn't always mean bad. There's so much good that comes from this life. We have met so many amazing people on our journey, and our house, we kind of have this open revolving door. So many people come into the house to help us care for Havala, nurses, therapists, and friends, you know, this village that we've built, it really does take a village. And I've had so many amazing experiences. I mean, even getting it to go to Disneyland, mm-hmm. you know, things like that, just mm-hmm. it kind of, these opportunities just seem to find us with Havala. And I want the best for her, and I want her to have all the opportunities we can give her. And things are sometimes a struggle, and watching her seize or watching her have other discomfort and pain, and we can't figure out what it is, but that hurts my heart as a mom. That's like torture. So sometimes things are really hard and there are bad moments, but overall for us, hard does not equate to bad. We love Havala and we are really glad she's part of our family.
Thank you so much, Whitney, for sharing Havala's experience and being a voice for her. Be sure to tune in for the second portion of this month's Rare Disease Report, as it shifts to a clinical viewpoint that goes into detail about the rare condition, the current methods of treatment, and how to differentiate CDD from general epilepsy. We'll be featuring an interview with Dr. Pestana Knight, who treats patients with this disorder at the Epilepsy Center in the Cleveland Clinic Neurological Institute. Thanks for listening. I'm Juliana Grassi, your host of the Rare Disease Report.